Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 513. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about mosques and pirates, the world's tallest building, and indoor skiing as we go to the United Arab Emirates. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Without further ado, let's talk about the UAE.
I'd like to welcome back to the show Zora O'Neill, travel writer, guidebook author, and recent author of the book All Strangers Are Kin. Zora, welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be back.
And I say back to the show, Zora's been on twice by my records, once talking about New Mexico and once talking about traveling around the Yucatan. And Zora, I do want to say officially here that since you have been on, I have taken your advice and we did that trip we talked about to the Rutupuk and Merida and all of the wonderful things outside of Cancun in the Yucatan and had a wonderful time.
I'm so glad to hear that. It's always gratifying for a guidebook writer to hear when someone follows their advice and it actually turned out well. So thanks.
Now, this time we are talking about some other place that is hot, but we are going a little further afield. We're talking about the United Arab Emirates today.
Yes.
And is that plural, Emirates?
Yes, it yes. is. And it's funny because before I went to the United Arab Emirates, I had to do some Wikipedia reading, I admit, because I was totally not clear on what Dubai is as an entity and what Abu Dhabi is as an entity. And I really had to clear that all up. So forgive me if I'm repeating what people know by now, but I was not clear on this a few years ago. The UAE is seven emirates, which are kind of like city-states. Like each emirate has a major city and then varying degrees of inland territory. And Abu Dhabi and Dubai are the ones you've heard of. Some people in literary and art circles have probably heard of Sharjah, which is right next to Dubai. And I say literary and art circles because they hold some publishing conferences and art events there that some people go to. And then there are these four other emirates that, please don't put me on the spot and make me name the other ones. I will tell you a couple of them, but off the top of my head, I'm like, frozen, test anxiety. And you don't hear about them because they don't have the huge ports and the huge wealth that Abu Dhabi and Dubai have. So, but they have amazing desert terrain, and it's really sort of the difference between the Emirates is very, very interesting. So I spent about probably 6 weeks there in total driving around, maybe more like five. But still, when I went, I was like, oh, I'm going to get the gist of this place and really quick and run out of things to do. And then I'll go to Oman and then I'll go here and go there. I ended up spending pretty much all of my time in the UAE. And it's really, really interesting.
Well, and I can name the other four emirates because, of course, I'm cheating.
Ah,
if
good.
You can help me with the pronunciation.
Okay.
So I've got Ajman.
Isn't it Ajwain?
I'm looking at Wikipedia here. A-J-M-A-N.
Oh, sorry. I'm conflating something else. Yes, Ajman.
And Fujairah?
Fujairah.
Fujairah. Okay. Mm-hmm. And Ras Al Khaimah.
Ras Al Khaimah,
okay.
Which means top of the tent because it's up at like the tippy top of the landmass up there. Everyone just calls it RAK.
The last one being Al-Quwain.
Oh, yes. Al-Quwain.
Hey, wow. Maybe I got that close. Okay.
I know. Pretty good. So, yes, I was mentally squishing Ajman and Al-Quwain together anyway.
Excellent. Well, let's start with the obvious question. I know why you went, and you went as basically a quest to learn Arabic or to relearn Arabic, but why should other travelers go to the UAE?
Well, I found it fascinating because I think the most Arab culture we get in America especially is sort of Mediterranean-facing Arab culture. So we get Lebanese food, we see lots of pictures from Egypt. All this stuff is sort of more oriented toward us. And what I found totally unexpected and cool in the UAE is that's all oriented toward India. You know, and Iran is right across the Persian Gulf, which incidentally, in the Gulf states, they call the Arabian Gulf. So just a little etiquette point there. So I'll call it the Arabian Gulf while we're talking about it. So yeah, Iran is right across the Gulf. And then India is a really short hop across the Indian Ocean from the Arabian Peninsula. And it wasn't until I was there and sort of saw the people there and ate the food that I realized that. I mean, objectively, I knew it because I looked at maps, but I had never thought about how it manifested, really. And practically speaking, this means fantastic, super interesting food. I feel like this doesn't get enough play in all the coverage of the Emirates because travel magazines are all concerned with like the latest luxury, blah, blah, blah. And what I find most interesting about the Emirates is the huge cultural mix you can find there. So in a way, it's like a really efficient trip. You can drop yourself into all these different little enclaves and be like, oh, it's like I went to India. It's like I went to the Philippines.
Cool. If someone had less time than you took, say a week or two, to explore the area, what kind of itinerary would you recommend? We're not going to see everything, obviously.
Right. The convenient thing is there are not a lot of obligatory sites to see in the Emirates. So you have a lot more free time to just hang out. You know, I'd say you do a few days in Dubai, do a couple days in Abu Dhabi, make sure you go out into the desert in the Abu Dhabi Emirate, because that's where the real, like, super cinematic, duney, gorgeous, rose-colored sands are and stuff. So you want to see that. And then I'd recommend going up, way up north to the Emirates you never hear the names of, and checking that out just for contrast and getting a bigger picture of the country. And it's not a big country. It's really easy to drive around, and you know, you can also arrange to be picked up and driven places for day trips and things like that. So it's really feasible to feel like you got a full sense of what's going on in a week.
Well, and you say drive around, a stupid question here, but we're right near Saudi Arabia and you're a woman author. Are you able to drive around without restrictions in the UAE?
Oh, yes, definitely. And actually, that's the reason I ended up going to the UAE. I'm really interested in like the really old classical poetry in Arabic and sort of the pre-Islamic Arabic poetry. And it's all set in the desert in the Arabian Peninsula. And there are like real landmarks you could go see they were talking about. Unfortunately, it's all in Saudi Arabia. I think internally you can travel around Saudi alone as a woman, but you can't just arrive at the airport alone as a woman. You have to be met by somebody. And I didn't want to go through that hassle. The UAE is totally chill. They do not have a lot of restrictions. I mean, you can't buy alcohol everywhere. You can only buy alcohol in hotel bars. But otherwise, you can pretty much be a tourist the way you would anywhere. I mean, don't take your top off, but...
And I'm going to say that a Muslim country is probably not the best place for a topless beach outing or a bachelorette party or someplace like that. If that's what you're looking for, perhaps not the best destination.
No, there have been some really awful cases in the UAE where they had to be like, that's not how we want you to be behaving on our beach. And, you know, common sense you would think would dictate this, but they kind of had to lay down the law. But in general, it's a pretty open, easy, super easy to travel place. I know tons of women who live and work there, single women who live and work there, and really, really like it. plenty of freedom, tons of professional respect. People are very polite. It's great. And I certainly had no problems traveling around and driving around by myself. I mean, people did kind of look at me strange because you don't normally do things by yourself in Arab culture or most of the world, really. It's only like pioneering Americans and Northern Europeans who traipse around by themselves. But yeah, logistically, that part is fine and pretty easy. And you can rent a car. The roads are all in really good shape because lots of money is poured into car infrastructure. The one hazard, however, is be ready to deal with traffic circles. And I know Americans especially have very, very little experience with traffic circles. And in Abu Dhabi especially, oh my God, so stressful. And I have to, full disclosure, I did get in a small accident. So yeah, when you go, assign your strongest driver with nerves of steel to do the driving. Like, the roads themselves are great, but some of the traffic is a little unsettling.
And personally, I find traffic circles, once you get used to them, especially the one-lane ones, the two-lane ones or three-lane ones are crazy, but aren't that bad. In fact, they may actually, you know, I see the rationale for them. And the one thing to remember is you have to get on. You don't have to get off right away. You can always go around again. If it's going to be too tight to make that turn, just go around again and get off next time you come by.
Yes, they're very forgiving that way. Don't make any sudden movements out of the center lane. That's my advice. Oh my God. Anyway, yeah, don't panic.
Excellent. So you started us in Dubai. What would you recommend we do and see in Dubai?
Dubai is like a huge city of malls. I mean, there's much more to it, but it's the city of malls and the world's tallest building. So you really have to go to the Burj Khalifa, which is the world's tallest building. And of course, at the base of the mall, at the base of the building, there's this humongous mall, which frankly, for me, malls are much more about people watching than about shopping. I mean, I could have spent a week there just like hanging out at the mall and marveling at this parade of people from everywhere in the world. It's so great. And at the base of the Burj Khalifa, there's this giant musical fountain, which is also the world's largest musical fountain, because I know we're all keeping...
Is there a lot of competition for the largest musical fountain?
Exactly. We're all keeping very close watch on that competition. Basically, anything you think is kind of big in the Emirates does turn out to be the world's largest. So they're really, really into that. And it's really beautiful. Like at sundown, like start the fountain and it's all lit up and everyone sort of gathers around and, you know, it plays pop songs and Arabic pop songs and stuff. It's a little goofy. My brother-in-law actually was, when I was getting to go, he had actually gone there a couple times. He lives in the Netherlands, and so it's a very short flight for him and his family, and they go there every winter for a little beach vacation. And so he had a lot more experience there, and he was like, oh, you have to go to the Burj Khalifa. At the fountain, it's a very Star Trek planet feeling. And once I got there, I totally understood, because everybody's wearing like national dress, and the lighting is like very... I don't know. It just feels like you're on some other planet. I mean, all of Dubai really feels that way. Anybody who's interested in urban planning will have a field day there. There are egregious mistakes and brilliant innovations and slightly dystopian things.
Did you want to put something in those two categories, what you were classifying as an egregious mistake and what you were classifying as a...
Well, egregious mistakes, they can't really help it, but the whole city is sort of strung out laterally along the coast. So there's very little like town center feeling. There's no single place in the city that feels like, oh, this is the place to be. But on the plus side, there's a super efficient metro that sort of zings up and down that stretch. I mean, it's a little slow, but it's very efficient that it's running frequently and inexpensive. So you can get around. You don't necessarily have to drive within Dubai. And I would actually recommend maybe don't bother driving in Dubai and don't rent a car until you're planning to leave Dubai, just because it spares you a lot of stress.
And my impression with Dubai is not where I want to go if I want to connect with traditional Arab culture.
No, and I don't want to like diss on Emirati culture because it gets dissed a lot and people are like, oh my God, there's nothing there. It's so cultureless, which is not really fair. Well, first of all, it's sheer numbers. Actual Arab Emirati population is maybe like 10% of the population, and almost everyone else is guest workers or otherwise like long super long stay foreigners.
Yeah, I was seeing a little higher than that, but 1.4 million out of 9.2 are actually citizens. So that's still a pretty small percentage.
Yeah, so just numbers wise, you're not going to run into a whole lot of Emirati Arabs. And it's also, by nature, they're all upper class, and you as a traveler are kind of interacting, unless you make real efforts and have personal contacts, as a traveler, you're mostly interacting with like the service class. Mm-hmm. And those are all guest workers, Pakistani, all over India, tons of Indonesians, Malaysians. It's really, really interesting. And if you take that as an opportunity for cultural interaction, it's a great time. And what I was saying, too, about sort of being able to visit all these enclaves and the food is there are so many awesome, like super authentic places to eat because there are restaurants that are cooking for guest workers and they're not marketing to a bigger, you know, they're not like dumbing down the taste to get the most customers in the door. They're like cooking for homesick people. So they're really, really good restaurants. And there's a great food tour called Frying Pan Food Adventures that actually does a walking tour around old Dubai and like goes around to a lot of these super intense places to eat, which is awesome.
And you say super intense, and I'm a little scared because I know you're from New Mexico, and we've talked about hot peppers before. So when you say super intense, if I was from the Midwest, you're saying lethal.
No, I'm not even talking about, there are potential insanely hot foods you could eat if you're mm-hmm. into that. But I'm just saying super intense in that it's, you know, you might not be given a fork to eat with unless you ask. And you
very authentic.
You know, you might have a lot of people like circling around you being like, oh, my God, what are they going to do when they eat this? Like waiting for your reaction. But I think that is a great opportunity. And people are so happy to interact. And everyone, this is a cool thing about the Emirates that should have been mentioned at the top. English is the lingua franca, so you can communicate with pretty much everybody. This was a huge detriment for my Arabic studies, but I should say for my book, because I went there being like, oh, I'm sure, you know, I'll just hang out and talk to my Emirati Arabic teacher. And of course, Emiratis don't teach Arabic. My Arabic teacher was Lebanese. She was fantastic, and I was delighted to meet her, but it was kind of funny that I was like, oh, right, I don't have this instant entree into Emirati culture. But I could get around the city great and talk to everybody about pretty much everything. So yeah, Dubai, I'd say go to a crazy mall. You can also go to the crazy mall with the ski slope inside it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We've got an article on the Amateur Traveler about skiing in Dubai.
Yeah, I mean, you have to see it. It's heartwarming, actually. It like seeing, again, like people from 80 countries all skiing on this crazy fake mountain. There's something kind of utopian, dystopian about it. It's awesome. So I say Dubai, like really focus on the international aspects. Although there is one thing, if you can plan ahead and schedule a little bit, there is a place called whichever the Sheikh of Dubai is, whose name I can't remember because I can't remember all the sheikhs of the different Emirates. His name, Center for Cultural Understanding. And they do these little like cultural breakfasts and lunches where this guy gives a talk about Emirati culture and basically will answer every question under the sun. And then they feed you amazingly delicious Emirati food, which in general is not really easily found in restaurants. So it's this sort of two-level, like, answer all your burning questions and have a great meal of this food that you otherwise couldn't buy.
Well, you might be embarrassed to find out that it's Sheikh Mohammed.
Okay, thank you.
As
thank
in,
you.
When in an Arab country, always guess Mohammed.
Anyway, yes, no disrespect to the fabulous Sheikh Mohammed. Anyway, so I'd recommend that certainly in Dubai, and the Frying Pan Food Adventures are both just great ways of getting a little bit inside the city, which can honestly, the way it's spread out and the way it's all malls, can feel a little bit impersonal. But those places are, you know, little ways in.
Excellent. Well, I think you moved us on to Abu Dhabi next.
Yeah. So Abu Dhabi, in contrast with Dubai, does feel like more of an Arab city. Abu Dhabi is the capital of the Emirates, so sort of all the government is there. I think proportionally there is just a larger Arab population there. And unlike Dubai, it's a more compact city, and there is a center. a central gathering point that is not a mall, and that's the Corniche along the seafront. And again, it's all about the people watching for me. You just go up to the Corniche after sunset, and everybody is out strolling. And, you know, there are people selling things, and it's like the public space that you don't see a lot of in Dubai. And even when it's like boiling hot out, because it's the desert, in the evenings, it cools off a little bit. So you can go out there and sort of hang out in a way that you can't hang out elsewhere.
When you say boiling hot, that reminds me of the question of what time of year would you recommend that we go?
A lot of Northern Europeans who are like starving for sun go there in the wintertime. I was there in February and I still found it quite cold. Basically, people who live there say they have the air conditioning on pretty consistently from like mid-April to mid-October. But I would say like March, April would be lovely. It's not totally like paralyzingly hot. And then sort of same for the fall shoulder season. I mean, if you want the full-on experience, you could go in the middle of the summer. And I have been through there on a layover when it's boiling and it's like, oh, okay, reality check. But you have to like slow down your itinerary, slow your roll a little bit in the summertime. I wouldn't be fond of it because I don't really like air conditioning all that much and like the popping in and out of the air conditioning. But, you know, you're not going to be sweating because basically everywhere, even the bus stops are air conditioned. So that gives you an idea how much heat you're dealing with.
Well, and I was looking and it looks like our high temperatures are going to be, if we were in Celsius, 40 to 45. And that for those of us who live in, think in Fahrenheit, is going to be over 100, like minimum.
So. And let me just add, it's not necessarily a dry heat. Like you think it's the desert, but you're on the water and it can get kind of muggy. And in the winter when it's much cooler, it can feel a little sort of clammy cold because you get this, you know, the buildings aren't built to be warm necessarily. So you get this sort of chill. It's not terrible. But ideally, you want to go at a time when you can be outside a little bit. There's some nice, in Dubai, there's a really nice like creek cafe by the creek, which is like the old part of Dubai. And you want to be able to sit outside and enjoy that and not feel totally flattened.
Are there other recommendations of things to do or see in Abu Dhabi?
So in Abu Dhabi, I'd say like the one absolute must sight in all of the Emirates really is the giant, giant mosque there in Abu Dhabi. And it's the Sheikh Zayed Grand Mosque. And it's amazing just on the face of it. If you have any kind of background in Islamic architecture, you can kind of go in there and like nerd out on how all these elements have been put together in a single building. But basically, they built this thing. It's huge. And they built it not just for scale, but also to sort of use the best artisans from around the Arab world. And so there's like the world's largest single piece of handwoven carpet that women wove in Iran. And then they brought all the women over to like weave it all together seamlessly inside the mosque. There are like the world's largest chandeliers, which are these amazing glass things and beautiful mosaic inlay. And it's great because it's open to visitors. It's like a huge tourist attraction. So you go and you get led around by a native Emirati tour guide who, again, is like happy to answer all kinds of questions. Again, it's like a rare opportunity you get to kind of pick locals' brains. And they're super nice. And it's just a beautiful, super relaxing space.
It looks like something out of the Arabian Nights, or at least the Disney version of it. I mean,
yes, it is a little bit like that because there's, you know, they're using this very like Indian style domes. It's like this weird synthesis of all these styles. It's pretty great.
Cool. Anything else we should do while we're in Abu Dhabi?
Actually, there's a whole wing of Abu Dhabi that has been built since I was there. This area called Saadiyat, which is kind of new district, and it's the cultural district where they're putting in all these museums, you know, a branch of the Louvre and a branch of, I can't even remember what else, but it's like every famous architect meets every famous museum and they're building it all there. And I honestly haven't checked up on it to see how soon. I think one of the museums was getting very close to opening, but I haven't checked recently. So that would be something to look into. I went there when nothing had been built, and it was just this big, I think one luxury hotel had opened, but it was just this big open sandy expanse. And then there was basically like the installation of what the place would be like, a big display on what was being built and scale models of all the museums and things like that. And it's kind of amazing to come from somewhere in America. We don't do large scale building anymore. We're kind of just maintaining what we have, and there's not a lot of huge visionary work happening. So it's pretty amazing.
You need to tell that to Apple, apparently, who are building the new world headquarters. But
Okay. Well, all right. But it's interesting because that's totally private money, right?
Sure, so absolutely.
In Abu Dhabi, it's like top down. The Sheikh has said, like, we're going to be world class in all these things. And what I find really interesting is, of course, this is all fueled with oil money, but they know the oil is running out. And basically, all their investment now is to make a city that is sustainable, that has other economies functioning once the oil goes away. So they happen to have, you know, there's many problematic things about how things are being built and ecologically and with the labor force and things. But overall, it's astounding to go somewhere and just see that kind of vision at that kind of scale. I imagine it's happening places in China too, but I haven't been there. This is the closest I've gotten to like, oh, you're building all of that from scratch and it's gonna happen. So that's kind of amazing to see. And I'll be very interested to go back to the Emirates and see how it has totally changed since I was there in 2012. So that pretty much covers the city. And then outside Abu Dhabi, the city, but in the Abu Dhabi Emirate area, that's where I said you should definitely go out into the desert. There's a tiny little town called Liwa, which is way out, like close to the border with Saudi Arabia. And there's a beautiful resort out there that is not crazy expensive. I mean, in the realm of luxury resorts, let's just say that's not crazy expensive. Like, I briefly considered staying there, so it can't be that insane. But it's worth, you know, just going to have lunch and sort of enjoy the view. And you can just drive this road out past Liwa, like out to Tell el-Kabir, which means like the big hill, which is the understatement of the year because it is this giant dune in the middle of nowhere. And you go out there at sunset and you're like, oh my God, there's nothing. It's so beautiful. Yeah, you really feel like you're in a movie. So it's worth going out there just to get that vast expanse.
Excellent. I'm wondering if you had a chance to get out while you were there to, and I'm going to butcher the pronunciation, I'm sure, El Ain?
Oh yeah, El Ain, El Ain. That's right on the border. I think that's technically in the Dubai Emirate, I think. Okay. And it's right on the border of Oman. And there's, speaking of like beautiful roads, there's this mountain at the edge of El Ain, and you can drive up to the mountain. And the road up there is one of these, I think the Germans built it. It's like this beautifully smooth, perfectly curved and banked road. And you're like, zing, you feel like you're in a car commercial. Feel like you're in a car commercial for like most of the Emirates. But it's like this beautiful view over the desert. And down at the base of the mountain, there's this neat zoo nature area, which I didn't get to spend enough time in. It was really, really neat. Very low-key zoo, not like stuff all in little cages. And it's just interesting. El Ain is also really sort of the second city of Dubai. And it's where I think traditional families like still keep a house in El Ain and like use that as their inland hangout. There is a bit more old history. There's a big old fort there, and the Sheikh's former home is there as a museum, and that's really beautifully done. And you can go around from room to room, and there are portraits of all the Sheikhs and the whole royal family on the wall. And I don't know, you get more of a sense of where the Emirates are coming from culturally when you go to El Ain, although that has some terrible, terrible roundabouts, some terrifying traffic circles. Oh my God.
Well, and the reason I was asking is the one UNESCO World Heritage Site is the cultural sites centered there, the oasis areas around there. I saw that there were vestiges of civilization going back to 2500 BC. So really getting back into some of the much older human inhabitation in the area.
I'm embarrassed to say I did not go to those.
That's okay.
There's only so much time.
Right. I was too busy admiring the old neon signs in downtown LA. It's funny. Dubai is so like super modern, latest technology. And LA is like two-story buildings at most and like groovy old neon on everything. So you kind of get this like, oh, that's what things were when they first got stuff in the 70s when they first started building up the infrastructure in the Emirates, and that it's like frozen in time. I think it's the Hilton there is such a throwback. It's awesome if you have any love of like retro, weird, kitschy retro 60s stuff.
Excellent. And then you wanted to take us up to the northern part of the Emirates before we finish up here.
Yes. So there's much more to do up there. And I'll just tell you what I did. But I feel like it's representative sample and you can probably go deeper into the natural stuff. But I went to Ras Al Khaimah, or R-A-K, rock, as they say. I went up there because I had somehow frittered away all my time driving around and around in traffic circles. And I was like, I meant to go to Oman also. And there's this funny little part of territory that is this non-contiguous piece of Oman, like the very tippy point of what would be the Emirates, like the closest point to Iran, which is just across the Gulf. That actually belongs to Oman and not the Emirates. And it's this beautiful territory of just this, if you look on a map, it's like all these little disparate island kind of, it's like, it looks kind of like shredded fabric or something, just this little patchy pieces of land. And it's super clear and beautiful water. And basically, you can go to Ras Al Khaimah and do a day trip to this part, this little patch of Oman, and take a little boat around. And it's a very common trip. But once you're out there, it's so beautifully remote. You're seeing these villages that the Omani government kind of wanted to keep people in villages and not have them all desert their villages and move to the city and go broke and stuff. And so the Omani government like ran power to all these places, but not necessarily roads. So there are these villages that are like on the water that are traditional fishing villages, and they've got power and they've got kind of the basic amenities they need. And then to keep them there, actually as further incentive to stay there, they gave them very good fishing rights. So there are these villages that are kind of like they've always been, but people aren't totally miserable in them. And you kind of cruise around on these boats, and they're like, we saw like big schools of dolphins and like gorgeous fish in the water. And it's just this, you don't necessarily think of that kind of desert water area as having teeming with life, but it really, it was fascinating. And you're like cruising around on this traditional wooden boat. It was really great. And I think that's kind of a great antidote to the huge new city building. It kind of gets you back, reminds you that people have been living there since whatever, 2500 BC, whatever you said. And this is a lot of the way they've been feeding themselves and building up culture for all that time. And if you're at all into desert, I'm originally from New Mexico. So some desert stuff, I'm like, yeah, I've seen it before. But the desert territory in the Emirates, like both that huge sort of huge duney sandy desert and the really rugged mountain parts up in the north part of the Emirates, like in Ras Al Khaimah, are really striking and just gorgeous. Like the rocks are gorgeous colors and it's great. And it's just nice to see a contrast to the cities.
And to see the desert, is there a particular place that you would recommend we go, or is it all around us or what?
It's kind of all around you. The Emiratis really see the whole desert as their birthright, and like everybody owns a four-wheel drive car, and everyone just feels as though they can drive wherever they want and camp wherever they want. There's no great regulation or anything. There are a couple designated nature parks. I mean, it's not a total crazy free-for-all, but in general, that was what I found most impressive, was just like people do feel free to sort of drive off-road and go do their thing. Obviously, don't do this if you have zero experience doing it. But there are lots of guides to driving around the desert in like very good detailed guidebooks with recommended really rugged trips you can do. And, you know, sort of laying out landmark by landmark how you would drive and certain dirt tracks and things like that. So if you're up for that kind of adventure, it's awesome for that, because you really can do it on your own if you want to. and just sort of strike out, you know, put the supplies you need in your car and take off. And I know a lot of people who live there do that pretty regularly. And you can also, like in Dubai, there's a company called Platinum Heritage that does these really nice desert trips. Sort of the standard tacky trip is something called a dune bashing trip, where they take you out and like dune buggy things, and you drive around, you make a lot of noise, and then kind of hang out and you come back. Like, there's nothing particular about the place in those dune bashing trips, and they might be fun. I haven't been on one. But the Platinum Heritage trips are very much like, we're going to show you like what Emiratis have always done in the desert. And they like take you out in these like old Land Rovers and sort of take you way out there. And they have like an old traditional Bedouin camp set up, and, you know, they feed you really traditional food. And it's a very nice kind of sedate thing to do. And it's not very far from Dubai, is the thing, is like you drive an hour and a half and you are out there. So that's the nice thing, is it's all very accessible, this wilderness. And up farther in the northern area, I'm pretty sure there are one or two sort of nature parks up there. Although, because I kind of committed to this little Oman day trip, I didn't end up following up those other leads. So I can't say specifically. I can say that Oman day trip was awesome, and I totally, totally recommend it.
Okay. As we start to wind this down, what's going to be the biggest surprise for me when I finally get to UAE?
I think the influence of India, I think, is one of the huge things. And it's not just because there are a ton of Indian guest workers there, although that kind of keeps it alive. But like, you really see it historically, and like, you understand, like, that's how the spice trade was happening. Like, stuff was coming from India to the Arabian Peninsula and getting, you know, like, there are these trade routes that you see in dotted lines on maps, and then you kind of see how they played out and what they built in this area. I'm kind of saying that in a very broad strokes way. I think a lot of the spice stuff happened in other parts of the Arabian Peninsula. Dubai, and specifically, was very wealthy from pearl diving in the Gulf. And I think actually that reminds me of one of the things that really surprised me. I went being like, oh, you know, it's the desert. It's desert Arabs, it's Bedouins. And then I actually, this is a thing I describe in the book, All Strangers Are Kin, where I went to the Dubai Museum, and I'm kind of going through there and seeing all these displays about the old pearl trade and all these different things. And I happened to pass this little tiny room, and they were like, Bedouins. You know, the sign was like very cryptic, and they were like, Bedouins. They are very strong and very honest, and sort of this mythical language. And it said they and not we. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, that's I hadn't really thought through all the terminology before and how people see themselves. And I think what was most surprising, I kind of stood there and like, oh, put it all together. Oh, Dubai faces the water. That's the seagoing culture and the pearl diving culture. And it's still really alive. These beautiful, beautiful wooden boats that are still being built and, you know, used to ship stuff across to Iran and stuff like that. And they're like moored there along the creek in Dubai, and people are loading stuff on them, boxes on them of like ovens and refrigerators. I mean, they all say made in China. It's like this crazy collision of different levels of trade and stuff like that.
Speaking of that, the RAK, which I will not attempt to pronounce again, that in the late 1700s, very, very early 1800s, to the British, that was the piracy coast. And so, yeah, they were definitely sea-facing and not all just pearl divers at that point.
Yeah, and I think one of the early sheikhs in Dubai was totally unapologetic about that. He was like, you know, the Emirates was part of the British Empire for a while in a very, like, they were part of it, but they weren't an official state or anything. And the sheikh was very unapologetic. He's like, yep, we made our early money on smuggling. Like, we're legitimate now, but at the time. And I actually have a friend who did that Oman day trip I was talking about, the little boat trip. And she said when she was up in the town in the little tippy point end up there before they were getting on the boat, she was like, oh, yeah, I'm just you know, we're sitting there waiting to get on the boat. And meanwhile, the next boat over is being loaded with like cases and cases of cigarettes and things like that. And she was like, how dubious. And actually, the guide on our boat trip was saying, like, there's tons, because it's, like I said, this strange little patchwork of land and sea mm-hmm. and stuff. And so, and everybody has a boat. And Iran is like right over there. So there's a lot of back and forth.
Not all officially sanctioned trade is the impression I'm getting.
No. And some of it involves livestock. There was some story about like people are trading like, you know, certain consumer goods from the Emirates for like very good sheep.
Okay.
Very tasty sheep from Iran. I mean, this may be something they tell tourists. I have no idea. But I do love the idea that like undercover of the night, these little boats are going out filled with cigarettes, and then they come back filled with goats or whatever.
Excellent. But before we get to the last four questions, anything else we should know before we go to the UAE?
Well, I would say everybody always asks, like, how do I dress in a Muslim country? What do I do? Mm-hmm. And dress conservatively. And
so cover shoulders and no décolletage and cover your knees.
Yeah. Of course you go and you'll see plenty of cleavage all over the place. For me, this is something that going to the UAE really cemented for me. Like, the Muslim clothing stuff comes out of a very specific environment, and that environment is blazing mm-hmm. sun and terrible heat, and you are so much happier if you are covered from the sun. If you go out in, like, your normal summer apparel and your tank top and shorts, yeah, it's a little culturally tacky, but it is also incredibly painful when you get this terrible, terrible sunburn and the wind the wind kicks up and suddenly you have like sand blowing into your sunburn. Like, there is a reason people dress like that. And you see it very, very clearly. There was a terrible sandstorm when I first got to Dubai, and like you couldn't mm-hmm. see for 3 days. And then I was out in Al Ain actually driving around, and there was this other horrible sandstorm, and I got back to the hotel and I'm like gritting my teeth, bracing to run to the door of the hotel. And these women were getting out of the car next to me, and they're in sort of head to toe black, the traditional abaya, and they're wearing their headscarves like cinched mm-hmm. down super tight and face veils. And I was like, oh, they're not getting sand in their teeth. They're not getting sand in their hair. Anyway, so you don't have to go that extreme, of course. Women don't have to. There's no expectation that you need to dress like that. But just remember, you're going to a desert and you want to keep the sun off.
Well, and probably bring a scarf if you're going into any mosques.
Exactly. Although the one in Sheikh Zayed, mm-hmm. the one in Abu Dhabi I was talking about, they have scarves and robes for women to wear. So,
excellent. Yeah, when we did the amateur traveler trip to southern Morocco last year, we learned how to tie our, I want to say turban, but that seems a little more Indian when I say it that way. But and then how to pull the one part of it down so you could use it over your face. And there was one point at which it was just before we went out into the desert and the wind was blowing and we all thought we were going to be needing that. So, yeah.
Right. You're like, actual concrete tip. Right. Not just, a salesman shtick.
Exactly.
It really is useful.
You're standing in the prettiest spot that you saw in the whole UAE. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
I think the Sheikh Zayed Mosque, they're just like the internal courtyard and the stone inlay. And then you see like little glimpses of the colorful handwoven rug inside. Mm-hmm. And the scale of it is so dramatic. The arches are huge and the people are all quite small. And there's this great aesthetic thing traditionally in the Emirates where men wear white and women wear black, period. And, some people play with that a little bit. But because everyone, the women have all been given their official Sheikh Zayed Mosque robes to wear on the tour and stuff, that kind of cements this image. And you kind of look around and it's this very serene, little pops of color from the rug and the stone inlay. But there's basically the white stone and then kind of everybody standing around in little black robes and things. It's gorgeous. It's really relaxing. Hmm.
One thing that makes you laugh and say only in the UAE.
Oh my God. There was so much of that. I mean, I think I said that every time I went around a traffic circle. I stayed with a woman in Abu Dhabi who I found on Airbnb, and a lot of the Airbnb stuff is just like, you know, condo rooms. Mm-hmm. But this was, and this was a room in someone's house, like very middle class house in Abu Dhabi. And she was wonderful. And she like almost would not let me leave. She and her husband were like, oh, no, stay for lunch. And then as I was like, but I have to get on the road. And they're like, no, stay for lunch. And then as soon as I ate lunch, they were like, wait, we have dessert. And sort of pinned me to the couch and gave me huge servings of dessert. And then they're like, oh, it's just not safe to drive after you've eaten a big meal. You really need to stay and take a nap. And I was so tempted. I was like, I could stay here and have you like feed me things forever. And then when I left, she like spritzed me all over with perfume and gave me a big hug. The whole story of her is of meeting her and her husband is in this book I wrote. And it just, what a treat. Anyway, the exchanges you do have, because people speak English and because, you know, they're all in this place by choice. I mean, most people are there, have decided to come to the UAE to work and are kind of open to new things by definition. So you meet some really, really interesting people.
Excellent. Finish this thought. You really know you're in the UAE when what?
You really know you're in the UAE when you see a total girl gang striding through the mall, like super girl squad, and they're all wearing black abayas or, you know, big black robes, and they're sort of billowing out, and they have them kind of unzipped so you can see a little bit of their super couture clothing, like glimmering underneath. And the style with these women is they put their hair in these huge beehives and then put the sort of like loose headscarf over that, draped over that. And usually like huge, heavy black, like Amy Winehouse eyeliner. So these girls just look, I mean, it kind of gave me slight flashbacks to like the girls who wanted to kick my butt when I was in middle school, you know, where I was like, ah, I'm back in the mall in Albuquerque. I'm going to get my butt kicked by these girls. But I don't know. It's just the fashion is fantastic. You think like, oh, everyone wears black. Everyone wears white. There's nothing, but there's some fantastic, fantastic style.
Excellent. And if you had to summarize the country with three words, what three words would you use?
Diverse, okay. Serene. Once you get out of the traffic and into the desert, it's like you pulled the plug and it's all you hear is like this little breeze and the sun, you know, the sand slightly blowing. It's amazing. Okay. Diverse, serene, and commercial. It is like unapologetically, this is what happens when capitalism is given like 200% free rein. Like it's just a really interesting thing that has been built there. It's really over the top and fascinating.
Excellent. Our guest again has been Zora O'Neill. And Zora, you've mentioned the book a couple times. Tell us a little more about your latest book.
Oh, sure. So it's called All Strangers Are Kin, Adventures in Arabic and the Arab World. And it's coming from Houghton Mifflin Harcourt is the publisher, and it'll be out in June. And it's basically about my experience. I studied Arabic all through college and graduate school, and I studied very academic Arabic, like the Arabic of literature. And I studied it mostly for reading and writing. And I never got really good at speaking with people and were very comfortable. So my mission with this book was to go back to the Middle East and study only spoken Arabic and kind of use that, you know, finally, like use Arabic as an actual communication tool and and also use it as a way of talking about the Middle East that is totally separate from political stuff and stuff you read in the news, and just as a way of sharing my previous experiences there had all been super positive, and you meet, you know, you're just like, this matches like nothing I see in the news. So I really wanted to share that, and sort of traveling with language at the forefront gave me a great opportunity to meet fabulous people who spritzed me all over with perfume and, you know, held me down and made me eat dessert. There was a lot of that. So I say it involved, it is a book with many scenes of extreme hospitality and many other very funny things. So,
well, and we should say that while we focused in on the UAE, your travels were more extensive than that. It's just we wanted to focus in on a smaller region just for the purposes of this show, because it's already going to be a long show and we just talked about the smallest country you went to. So.
Right. Well, no, I did go to one smaller country. I went to Lebanon, which is teeny weeny. But whoa, there's a lot to talk about there. Yeah, the book covers Egypt, where I have the most experience and where I had previously studied Arabic and lived for a while. So Egypt, and then I went to the UAE and did a little side trip to Qatar while I was there, and then Lebanon and Morocco. And I picked all those four countries because I really wanted to talk about what was, the phrase is the Arab world, and it makes people think it's a single place when in fact it's a collection of all these countries where people happen to speak Arabic, but don't necessarily have a ton of other things in common. And in fact, the Arabic they speak differs widely from country to country, which, you know, hijinks ensue when you try to study in one country and then move to the next one and try to learn that dialect. And by the end, my Arabic was very, very broken, but I felt like I had learned so much more than I even anticipated. So
excellent. Well, Zora, thanks for coming back on the show and sharing with us your travels, a little piece of them, and your newfound love for the UAE.
Yes, my pleasure. Thanks for letting me talk about it.
I think we'll skip the community section today with news from the community. I'm on the road. I'm actually traveling today in Corning, New York, where, among other things, today I was blowing glass, learning how to make glass at the Corning Museum of Glass. And you'll be hearing more about that on the blog and maybe sometime later also on the podcast. But for now, let's wrap this one up. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And before we start talking about where to go next, is the time to join us at amateurtraveler.com/trips, our private Facebook community. And as always, thanks so much for listening.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.